Dominica, good afternoon. The Eastern Caribbean, good afternoon to you as well. And all further afield, yes, pleasant good day to you. Welcome to another talk on the block here. The time in Dominica, it's 1:02. And that is where we have to stop for our talk on the block. Dominicans, I want you guys to be very, very comfortable wherever you are. Because coming up in just a bit, we're going to have a very frank and open discussion. With a brother who has got a lot of experience in the topic that we're going to discuss this afternoon with him right here on Q. Worked a number of places already, written a number of books. And yes, I think he is very, very versed in dissecting and expounding on the broad topic that some of us call corruption. Yes, corruption in government, primarily that is. But to some of us, this may be a very big and broad term. Gonna break it down for us and also deal with incompetency. Dr. Darlington Aikaiso is my guest here for the better part of the hour. Nigerian by birth, but has worked and gone a lot of places across the globe. And it's my pleasure this afternoon to bring to you, into your space, Dr. Aikaiso. But just before we go there, Dominicans, and the listening public, let's pay some bills at this time. We will be right back. Take a listen.
Good morning, class.
Good morning, sir.
Now for today's pop quiz. Are you ready for today's pop quiz?
Yes, sir.
First question. What is smooth, creamy, and rich in nutrition?
Sir.
Yes, Benton?
Grass evaporated milk.
Correct. Second question. What sweetens and thickens your tea or coffee? Yes, Dangleben?
Grass evaporated milk.
Very good. Question number three. What savors your desserts, cereals, soups, and porridge? Celia?
Grace evaporated milk.
And that is correct. Boys and girls, these questions are not only to grade you on paper, but because Grace evaporated milk is a grade A for you. Healthy and nutritious. Affordably priced. Available island-wide. Distributed by Archipelago Trading Limited. Grace evaporated milk. Number one evaporated milk.
Yay! Attention! We're a go for rocket launch.
Roger.
Engines ready.
Yay, Daddy!
Liftoff in 3, 2, 1.
Kids, breakfast is ready.
Ooh, launch postponed.
Give yourself a strong start to the day with Dutch Lady. Milk with essential nutrients, calcium, vitamins, and protein. Dutch Lady, building strong families since 1871.
If you know your favorite store, dial it now. 612-1253, that's Mega Deals. You can rely on Mega for some real deals on name brand clothing and electronics. High quality, low price. We are a wholesale and retail store located in Calabashi, right on the main road. Check us out on Facebook, Instagram as Mega Deals Dominica. Like our page, check out our stuff. Call us, visit us. We'd appreciate that. Come try it on, love it, buy it. At Mega Deals, your one and only online and brick and mortar store. Mega Deals is also on wheels. We make it convenient for your shopping. We deliver straight to your door. Email us at info@megadealsda.com. Rely on Mega Deals for some real deals.
Thank you. All right, Dominicans, thanks for sticking around and the many listeners of Q95 at this time. It's 108 right here. And as I said before the break, we're going to have a very open and candid discussion with our brother here, Dr. Darlington Akaiso. I heard from him, and based on what I heard, I decided to share what I heard with you in terms of having him speak to you guys directly this afternoon. But just before I go and open up his lines, let me just, those of you who haven't heard it as yet, in terms of a small intro, he will be expounding on it when he gets here. But let me just let you hear this about the caliber of the man to speak to us in just a bit.
Hello, everyone.
Good day. My name is Dr. Darlington Akaiso. I am an academic scholar. I have written numerous books on global security, global leadership studies. I have personally worked in different fields such as risk management, resilience planning, and international development for the past 25 years. I am an adjunct university professor at Northwestern University in Toronto. I also teach at the University of West Indies. I have taught at Trent University, University of Manitoba, all in Canada. And again, I do lots of work when it comes to international development. That's who I am. My bachelor's degree is in information technology and informatics. I do have a master's in management information systems, and I also have a doctorate degree in leadership studies. I'm honored to be on your show, and I'm more than happy to share my own views with everyone across the world. Thank you.
That's a snapshot of the brother Dr. Darlington Akaiso. He is on the line. Dr. Kaiso, good afternoon to you in a very, very special way. Welcome to the desk of Q95. You have myriads of people listening here in Dominica and across the globe. Good afternoon, sir.
Very good afternoon to you, too. Thank you very much for having me.
Yes, and I appreciate your presence here this afternoon in terms of our discussion here, the initial discussion, but I can tell the listeners, it's going to be one of a fruitful one, sir.
Sure. I'm ready when you're...
Dr. Kaiso, I gave a little introduction of yourself, but, in terms of just getting the conversation started, so can you just expound just a little bit on who really is Dr. Darlington Akaiso?
Absolutely. Thank you very much. About Dr. Akaiso, this is really who I am. I am an investigator. I am a researcher. I am someone who is in the quest of always looking for something that could be better. So again, you could put this together and say I am an academic scholar, which is also who I am. So you may see evidence of the research work I have done in the books I have written. I have written so many books on global leadership, on global security. All of those things revolve around the ways of which we could make our society better. So, again, if you look at the books I write, there is something about me which I think it's important the audience should know. I am a transformational author. So when I write books, I do not just present you with problems, I present you with the solutions that could actually fix those problems. So that's the unique things when it comes to the books I have out there in the market. Thank you.
And in terms of the areas that you already worked, sir?
Sure. I have worked in areas such as leadership studies, like I have mentioned. I have worked in areas of risk management, global risk management, disaster risk reduction, resilience planning, international development. So those are areas I have worked in, and luckily for me, I have worked in over 120 countries across the globe.
Yes, you said luckily for you, and I agree that as well. All right, Mr. Kaiso, thanks for, you know, that brief introduction of yourself, as it were. There is a term in terms of governing or governance of any country, sir. There is a broad term that persons normally use in terms of describing a government that is not bringing home or not delivering on behalf of the people, and also there are some negative effects that goes with that. And that broad term is called corruption. We have been hearing that term in a number of places, a number of countries, a number of leaders have been called by that term, very corrupt. Can you just, based on your experience, give the listening public, just break down that broad term to some in terms of when we call someone corrupt or a government or governance or governance system being corrupt? And also, I need you to tie that in with the situation where or if a government may be incompetent as well. So just kind of tie in those two, please. Thank you very much as we begin this conversation here.
Sure. Thank you very much. Straight into your question, when you talk about corruption, many people will wait for the dictionary definition of corruption, but we're going to change the narrative here.
Yeah.
So when you talk about corruption, what is it you're looking for? Think of corruption as a virus. Think of corruption as a decay. Okay? Think of corruption as something or a state of which people are constantly deprived of what they should be having. Okay? So when you look at corruption in situ, you're looking at, let's say, someone in a position of authority. So when you're in a position and you're entrusted with power, and you begin to acquire illicit benefits, or you begin to abuse that power by becoming dishonest, by beginning to do fraudulent things, things of which makes the system of which you're supposed to secure, things of which begins to make, you know, things which make that system begin to decay. So you are not adding value, you are taking value away from the system by presenting to people who you are not. So this is a process. This doesn't just happen at once. Okay? So this is a process of which you are gradually taking away the spice, or taking away the meaning from something which was original. That is what you are doing. And this is all about corruption. And as you rightly say, if we have to tie this into a system, what does this mean? So I always explain this using two terms. The first term is collectivism, and the other term is individualism. Okay? So you go into a system or you go into a position of authority and you have to represent the people. But instead, what you do is you become very individualistic. You begin to think about yourself without thinking collectively of the people that nominated or elected you into power. So this is the beginning point where you begin to abuse power, where you begin to nurture things for yourself against that for the people. You remember when I, you know, when I started this, I said it is a process. So that's how this process begins, and this is how the virus called corruption, this is how it flows in every system.
Yes, sir. Now, should I ask you there, what are some of the signs and the symptoms of a corrupt system? What can
sure.
certain persons look for to, you know, describe a system as being corrupt, based on your
Absolutely.
Definition thus far?
Absolutely. So when you're looking for symptoms of a corrupt system, there are many things you have to keep, you know, there are many things you have to look out for. In a corrupt system, you look at, the primary thing you would see in a corrupt system is you will always see that there is so much dissatisfaction, and there is so much agitation. Okay? Everyone is agitated. Everyone is dissatisfied because they actually can see that there is a loss in so many things they had expected. Okay? So that's one primary thing you really have to look out for. Another symptom which you also have to look out for when you think about corruption are things such as non-transparency. Right? The government, you know, the system will become non-transparent. It would not allow people a clear insight to what they are doing. And the reason is obvious, because so many things are happening in there, right? Money is changing hands. There is bribery. There is so many things happening there. So they have to make sure that this is being concealed and the people outside cannot see what they're doing. So when it comes to transparency, a lack of transparency will clearly tell you that something is happening on the inside, which is not palatable to the people looking from the outside. Another symptom you will also see is the acquisition of illegitimate private wealth. Okay, you elected someone into power, and all of a sudden, the friend of which you knew, his social class changes. Everything changes about him. A man you used to know works in the government and let's say, $2,000 a month, is now beginning to live a life above the reach of what you even know he's being paid, what he's being paid. So when you begin to see all of these things, you begin to see a corrupt system. When you begin to see so much dissatisfaction, people become dissatisfied. The systems you have become very, very weak, and the institutions in place do not meet the purpose of which those institutions were established. So these are just a few of the symptoms that will actually showcase that there is corruption in the air.
Yes, thank you for breaking that down, as it were. Now, just to go back to one of the first points that I asked you, sir, in terms of the incompetency of that system, how would that show its head when you have a very corrupt system dealing with?
Very good question you've asked. In terms of incompetence, I think I need to take my time on that.
Mm-hmm.
When we talk about incompetence, there's one primary thing we're looking at when it comes to incompetence. Incompetence has to do with someone not having the necessary skills to becoming successful. So you may have a leader, someone who may have done well in an organization, someone who may have done well in a different setting, but coming into governance and doing very badly. Okay? He does not have the necessary skills to do the work of which has been given to him. So anytime you talk about incompetency has to do with acquiring the skills you need to do the work that you're being asked to. And most of the leaders we have today do not have the skills. And I will tell you why. Sometimes the folks we have in leadership positions believe that this is granted to them by nature, by God. This is supreme. We became leaders because, yes, we are leaders. And if you notice, they do not have a chronology of growth. How did they become leaders? Take a look at their chronology. Take a look at their growth path. Some of them are very inexperienced. And when they come into governance or when they come into government, all they do is to show us how incompetent they are because the skills to be where they are, they do not have it. Are they ready to learn? Is another question. Some of them are ready to learn, but some of them are not ready to learn because of the tenure they have in office. So one of the things you really want to watch out for is how did they get to where they are? Because what you are going to see is a product of where they're coming from and a product of what they have in them. And one thing I want you and the audience to see or to hear from me is that you cannot give what you do not have. So when you bring leaders that do not have skills, the skills needed to govern, all they give to you is what they do not have. And what they give to you is the skills they do not have. So you can't give what you do not have. So that is the result of what we see in governance today. Leaders come into power and give to us what they do not have. And what they do not have are things we are not looking for. We're looking for things they should have, like the right leadership skills. That's what they don't have, and that's why we're not getting it.
So, Mr. Kaiso, if, for example, can the listening public as well marry these two situations together? Tell me if I'm on the right track. Can a government be both corrupt and also incompetent at the same time?
Absolutely. Absolutely. In fact, both of them go hand in hand.
Mm-hmm.
You're incompetent because you don't have the skills required to do the job. And when you go on the job, you're being challenged because you are, you know, because of the expectations of you, which you can't satisfy. So what do you think then? As soon as the challenge comes in, you begin to ask yourself, okay, how much more do I have to stay in office? What are the things I need to do to cushion the people, to make the people relax? So that's where you begin to look into the coffers of the government. That's where you begin to have shortcuts. That's where you begin to look for everything criminal, everything that's not right. You lay your hands on them because you're looking for avenue to pool funds or to pool money. The intent of this money is to cushion the people. The people who once were agitated will now be satisfied based on the cushion of money you're using on them. And what happens? They become quiet. So incompetence and corruption work hand in hand.
Just a further point, sir. What would you say, or what would be your word on which is worse, if we have an incompetent government or we have a corrupt government, in your own, you know, perspective?
Very good question you've asked. Both of them are cancers, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
None of them is good. So we can't say one is better than the other. In fact, like I said, one actually leads to the other.
Yeah.
The only thing I'm going to talk about is the level of exposure or how bad one can get compared to the other. So having an incompetent leader is having someone who will definitely make the wrong decision. And when the wrong decisions are made, it is, you know, take for instance, it's like asking a country to go to war when that country should not be going to war. So what you've done is you've exposed the whole country. And the detriment, the effect of that could be very, very detrimental. So that's one. On the corruption piece, when a government becomes corrupt, what that government is doing is that government refuses to deliver to the people. So they themselves now come first. So everything that has to do with prosperity or everything that has to do with the gains of the system are being siphoned by a few amount of people. So this leaves the masses waiting and wanting. Is this a good place to be? No, it's not a good, it's not a good place to be. But can this be remedied? Well, this both situations we've talked about could be remedied, but not in the but not immediately. And I'll tell you how and why. The thing we have to look at is empowering the people. And unless we empower the people, those that are corrupt will remain corrupt. And those that are incompetent will remain incompetent. Unless you empower the people. And when you empower the people, it becomes a vocal thing. People become vocal. Their voices become heard. And it resounds. The decibels go in there. It resounds louder and louder that we have a corrupt government. And there is a punishment or there is a consequence to pay for corruption. That should be done. We have an incompetent leader. And there is a price to be paid for that. That should be done. But unless people are empowered to become vocal in their different settings, in their different respects, unless they become vocal, then these corrupt guys and these incompetent guys will have no other choice but to remain and do what they keep doing.
Yes, indeed. Mr. Kaiso, thank you for your delivery thus far. We're going to take a small break now, pay some bills. But just after the break, and listeners, yes, I'll give you an opportunity as well to pose a question or two or make a comment to Dr. Kaiso here. But Dr. Kaiso, after the break, you talked about remedy. And I think it would be remiss of me if I don't ask you, sir, how can, you know, by empowering the people, as you said, how can that or other situations in terms of remedy of a corrupt or incompetent system be brought about? After the break, sir, you can mull on that still. You'll respond.
Thank you.
All right. Let's take a break, Dominicans. Yes, we'll be back with Dr. Kaiso very, very soon. Let's do this here. We'll be back.
Make home a happy place with furniture from Astafans and Company Limited. Furniture for every room, beds, closets, wardrobes, side tables, even bathroom and toilet accents and accessories. Work or study from home with a brand new computer desk and chair. Relax with living room furniture, TV stands, center tables, indoor and outdoor chairs. Any piece of custom furniture you need is also available at J. Astafans and Company Limited's Furniture Factory. Call today, 255-2791 or 255-2793 and make your house a home. Astafans, right place, right price.
Sports Wrap, your dynamic, riveting weekly sports show on Q95. The entire Caribbean is listening to Sports Wrap on the big station every Thursday from 6 to 8 p.m. with renowned veteran sports commentator and retired magistrate Ozzie Lewis, famous cricketer and sports analyst Lockhart Sebo Sebastian, and national athletic coach Emmanuel Oblak. Sports Wrap, your one-stop shop for unique, inclusive, in-depth analysis of local, regional, and international sports, bringing you the best in sports debate and up-to-the-minute information and statistics. Sports Wrap, every Thursday, 6 to 8 p.m., two exciting hours of pure, exciting sports talk. The experts are in the house. Sports Wrap, every Thursday evening, only on the big station, only on Q95. Lock it in.
Madam Boboy Made, Laukali, Idikote Rice and Company. Yele Rice and Company, the only company I know with rice was cooking water and back and neck. Mawi di last valley shock. I said Bryce, Idi Ose plus Nefla, will you have a roofing material and seamless gutter ring? Yes. 24 gauge governors, all colors. Ever open Nipu Gas PL Agent, they program the computer to give you the exact size you want. And the seamless gutter ring, aluminum, that can better withstand the elements. You have in a easy way, so no leaking after a while. And so much more. Bryce and Company, by a bank close to the old mill at Enfield. Telephone is 617-2468.
This is Asa Banton, your Trapiton Water Ambassador, with your hurricane tip for today. Insurance checkup. Ensure that your home and car insurance policies are up to date and covers hurricanes, flooding protection, etc. Be prepared and remember to stock up on Trapiton Water.
Hassle-free loans for your every need. Courts have you covered, best believe. Courts ready cash is for everyone. Not to worry, fast approval. Hurry up and come, come, come. We got it all, we on the go. Courts ready cash, you already know. We got it all, we on the go, go, go. Courts ready cash, always ready. When you're ready, let's go.
Courts ready cash, ready when you are.
What does a coffee lover like me desire? Everything a cup of Café Brasil delivers. I need a coffee that's smooth. I need a coffee that's rich. I need a coffee bursting with flavor. You see, coffee isn't just a drink. It's an experience. At least when it's Café Brasil.
Indulge in the distinctive flavors of perfectly blended Robusta and Arabica coffee beans. Café Brasil. Taste the smooth, rich difference. Try our new Café Brasil Gold Coffee today.
All right, Dominicans, welcome back here. It is 1:32. And yes, we're talking to Dr. Akaiso on the matters of corruption and incompetency as it relates to government or governing any country. The numbers to call sometimes later, like in the next 10 minutes thereabout, when we open up the lines, they are 449-3095, 449-3096, 449-3097. Digital line 616-4257, overseas line being 305-432-9624. Let me get back to Dr. Akaiso here. Dr. Akaiso, before the break, I asked you about remedy. You mentioned empowering the citizenry. That is one way, you know, of curbing the scourge of any incompetent government or as well a corrupt government. Can you just elaborate, brother?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you very much. When it comes to empowering citizens, I did mention a few things. And one of the things I mentioned was about giving the citizens a say, an opportunity to also opinate on what they think. And some of this has to do with echoing what they feel, making sure that their voices are heard. From experience, some countries have tried this. And some have worked to a certain extent, and some has not worked. But today I'm going to share with the audience a little remedy I have. It's a grassroots system that actually works. And this is all about whistleblowing. And I'm going to expand on this. For you or for us to fight corruption, this has to transcend into every niche. So what I mean by that is, no matter the setting you find yourself, you do play a role. If you're a teacher, you can play a role as a teacher in fighting corruption. If you're a lawyer, you can play a role. As a student, you can play a role. Okay, so let me roll this back up. Let me talk about whistleblowing. In any corrupt system, what actually would make that system become weak is the ability of people to report on illicit activities they have seen. If I take you through the, through the sequence of what it takes for someone to steal in government, it does have a lot of stages. But first of all, they do devise a way of which funds could be taken illegitimately, and also how those funds could be transferred. But if you look at the whole process has to do with people. It has to do with you and me. So corruption is not done in isolation. It has so many dependencies, and we are those dependencies. So our ability to whistleblow, to say, no, I have seen something, and when I mean whistleblow, this should be anonymous. I have seen something that shouldn't be happening. Okay, I work in a bank, and I see a government official coming to the bank to deposit funds in another account with a different name, and this happens every other week. And this is the amount they have deposited. Put that information out there anonymously. And when people go to check, that exactly is what's happening. Okay? And I am a student. Let's say I come from, let's say I come from country A, right? And I am fortunate to be on a scholarship, and I go to school in the United States of America. And in my class, I have a student. And I could easily tell you from the surname that student is the son of a political leader. I will easily and quickly put it out there. This is the son of this man. He is the vice president of the country, and here he is in the school. So everything they do has to be exposed. We have to whistleblow. And when we do this, they become very weak, because everything they do will become in the open. That is another way, or a very good way, which I have seen, that has actually broken and weakened this corrupt leader.
Yes, indeed. Someone is listening, Doctor, and they're asking you here, how does corruption filter through and undermine the state institutions such as the courts, the police, etc.?
Very good question. Very good question you've asked. When corruption sets in, what happens, and I'll give you an example, using the court system as an example. Mm-hmm. When the judiciary becomes funded through the coffers of the system, let's say when the executive arm of the government is in charge of funding the courts, what do you expect? We expect to see things like manipulation of the judicial system, manipulation of the judges, because that is where they are being funded from. So unless the funding of the judiciary becomes independent of the control of the executive arm of the government, we will continue to see manipulation of judges. Okay? So all of those institutions you mentioned, so long as they do have a direct funding from the government, there is the tendency that it can be easily manipulated. And until those fundings become independent of the control of the government, then only would you see a fair system.
All right, thank you. Dr. Kaiso, it is 20 minutes to the hour of 2 o'clock. We're always slowly but coming to an end. Let me now open up the lines for the listening public audio, to the listening public audio rather. They may have a question, a comment or two, and want to punch it at you. All right, is that okay?
Sure, absolutely.
All right, thank you very much. Yes, Dominicans, listen here and abroad. It is your time now. There's much more in the tank of Mr. Kaiso. Communication is a two-way street, huh? So he wants to hear from you guys now. As I wait on the calls coming in here, let me play a voice note coming in here already.
Lofty, you are the best. Lofty, I don't know, but someone referred to you as the Martin Luther King of Dominica. I will go beyond that. You are the savior of Dominica, and these guests that you're bringing on daily, they are really, really inspirations to all of us. They inspire us to look forward to better things. Great, great, great delivery, Lofty. Have a good afternoon. I'm listening.
That's one person sending in a voice note here. Let's see if we can take a couple calls. All the lines are going now. Let's do the overseas line. First up, caller, yes?
Caller. When do you have a corrupt leader? When you have a corrupt leader that corrupts everything around you, everybody in the institution, how do you handle a situation like that? Thank you. I'm listening.
All right. Thank you for your question. Dr. Kaiso, I hope you're taking notes. When you have a corrupt leader, how do you deal with that leader that person is asking on from the overseas line? Let's see if we can slide in a couple more other callers here before I get back to Dr. Kaiso. Let's do this one here. Again, the overseas line. Yes, caller?
Good evening, Lofty. Good afternoon.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Good afternoon.
Yeah, interesting topic, and good afternoon to your guests. Lofty, I have a question for your guests. When you have a system, as we have in Dominica, that we know is corrupt and incompetent, as a result, the people are so disempowered. It's like everybody looking to see what they can get because the system itself is not producing or working for them. And as a result, they are willing to participate in this corruption to survive, to pay the bills, the water, the light bill, to send. If the citizens themselves have accepted the corruption so deeply that they themselves are participating instead of speaking out and, as the panelists say, blowing the whistle. They are so silent, they are so disempowered, they themselves are being part of the corruption. What can be done to solve that kind of problem? And I think it's a bigger problem, Lofty, than we really think. Thank you. I'm listening.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much. All right, let me let Dr. Kaiso kind of respond to this too before I open up the lines once more. Dr. Kaiso, did you hear the comments and questions?
Sure, I did.
Yes.
I did. Very good. Very good questions raised. Okay. If I may take the first question. The first question talked about corrupt leaders. What should we do about corrupt leaders? A very good question. When a leader is being pronounced corrupt, corruption goes in phases. It's not a one-day thing. It's not a two-year thing. And it grows stronger as much as you let it. When these people become corrupt, what you would see is that they do have a lot of influence, a lot of clout. And this is being built over time. So what do you do about corrupt leaders?
What you do about corrupt leaders is you need a system. When I mean a, you know, when I mean a system, you need a strong, you need to build a strong opposition. You need to build a strong opposition against these leaders, and as much power could be taken away from them, that should be done. And when I mean building a strong opposition, this should not just be left to those local in the country. Whether you live in London, whether you live in the U.S., and you're a Dominican, this is also your battle to fight. So this leader should be fought from the inside and also from the outside. A lot of leaders remain in power because we do not know the right cords to pull. We do not know the right strings to pull, which is what leaves them in power. But when these leaders, these corrupt leaders, when they get faced with pressure, international pressure, local pressure, regional pressure, at a point, from my experience, I see them giving in. So that's going to be my take on that question. On the next question, is a very big and a broad question, which you've actually talked about, which is about the citizens themselves compromising as a result of so many things, poverty and the rest of the things. I say this is a complex system because it takes a long time for us to actually get back on track when this is the case. And what do we do? What we need to do is to begin to teach this generation, to begin to teach our children, to, you know, to begin to unlearn, to make them unlearn the things they've learned. You rightly mentioned, in terms of the person that called, and you rightly mentioned that things become so hard that the common man has to key in to the order of the day, which is not the right cause of action. And you are doing this because there's poverty. Okay? So, again, if you do not teach the kids and our generation, if they do not unlearn what is going on, then this will become a phenomenon that transcends until a point where we cannot stop it. So how do we curb such a problem? It's education. And I'll tell you why. Doing something consistently and it is wrong doesn't make it right. You could do it 100 times. So long as it's wrong, it's wrong. But when you do that thing consistently and there is no one saying this is done consistently, this is random, but it is not right. If somebody doesn't say that, then the society sees it as being right. So a lie can be told so many times doesn't make it the truth. So what you see happening when the citizenry becomes a part of what is going on is not the right thing. We have to address it and not let the virus continue. So that would be my take on the two questions.
Yes, thank you. In terms of limiting the scourge of corruption or any incompetent government as well, I just want to kind of broaden the scope of our discussion here, Mr. Kaisu, and include now some of the other leaders, the non-partisan leaders in that conversation, to include, I must include them here, the leaders of the cloth, the men of the cloth, as they are so called. Martin Luther King called these guys the good book calls them the salt of the earth. And if the salt loses its savor or its saltiness, then it is good for nothing. Mr. Kaisu, we are talking about Dominica. I can tell you, there in, and that is in my own interpretation of how I see it, I'm a man on the ground. There is by far a compromise, as you said before, of some of our church leaders in Dominica, whereby they have gotten so comfortable with things that resemble or is in and out of itself corruption or corrupt activities, then their voice, you are not hearing their voice when needs be at the time, sir. I just need you to elaborate on that set of people that's supposed to be a very key cog in maintaining some semblance of order, as it were, where corruption and incompetence is concerned, sir. The men of the cloth.
Very good, very, very, very good point you have raised. When I look at Dominica, I see a population of about 10 plus million, right? And I have also researched in other countries with a much bigger population. And what you're seeing here is actually what also happens outside.
You see, wait a while, sir. You said when you look at the population of Dominica, what number you see?
Correct me if I'm wrong. I'm looking at about 10 plus million.
No, sir. You are off the bulls, I can tell you. Dominica is just about 50, 60,000 people. Maybe you're talking about the Dominican Republic. But Dominica, the Commonwealth of Dominica, 50, 60,000 people max.
Thank you very much for
that. That's like a village in Nigeria where you're from, sir.
That is very, very correct. Yes, Dominica is about between 50 to 70,000. Thank you very much for that correction. And honestly, this becomes a little bit manageable if you're looking at it from Nigeria, West Africa, where I come from, where we have 200 million people. But again, this is not to play it down. What you face is actually what we face, but what we face is on a broader scale. And why am I saying this? When we have fathers in the society, this is what we call them. We call them our fathers in the society. These are folks that we once respected. These are folks who maintain authority within institutions in a country of which their voices have always been, of which their voices have always been respected. But there comes a time when there is compromise, and then these voices become lower and lower, and at a point, these voices become unheard. What do we do about that? Remember what I told you. This is about having fruits in a basket and having some of the fruits begin to decay. Doesn't mean that all of the fruits are bad. Okay? So this is about human nature. Some of us will give up, but some will not give up, which is why I said it is important to keep your eye on the ball. It is very important, no matter how much a lie is being recanted to you, you should still stand firm and say, yes, this is what's happening. This is what has been repeated. This is what social media is carrying. This is what the media is carrying. But it is not the truth. So unless someone comes to debunk what they have said, or unless someone comes to challenge their viewpoint, those people may be seen as being correct. Because, yes, they do influence the society. So what am I saying? We need to try as much as we can to ensure that the fathers of the day, that the fathers we have in the country, should maintain a positive pose when it comes to decisions of, is this right and is this wrong? But for those of them that have actually derailed, we need to leave them where they are, but make sure that the public knows that their stance is not the right one. And I'll give you an example. In the country I come from, what happens is when we have leaders come into power, we have traditional rulers, our traditional fathers, we have religious leaders, they go to visit them. And what are they going to visit them for? They're going to visit them for things I may not actually say here. But what I know is that when they come back with briefcases, and the briefcases have so many good things in it. So what happens is, before the traditional rulers left to the seat of power, to meet those in authority, the people had actually fueled them with, these are the grievances we had. But when once they come back, those grievances are thrown away because they do have a briefcase filled with things I do not know, but I suspect they're good things. So what happens? Should the people now continue to trust those leaders? No. So what I'm saying is that there should be a wake-up call. We need to decipher between the leaders that have fallen apart and those that are still up, standing strong and fighting our cause.
Yes, another person asking a question of you here, sir. How do you empower a people when these same people, they have lost all the opportunity to earn an income?
Very good question you've asked. That is a very difficult one, and I will be honest with you. It's very difficult to empower people who have nothing, okay? And when people are at such a stage, they become complacent. Anything goes because of the state where they are. But what really helps is there is an element of education that goes in here. We have a proverb where I come from. And the proverb says that I could be poor doesn't mean that I do not have values. So everything here has to do with education. when you have an educated populace, they may not be rich. They may not have what it takes to make ends meet. Doesn't mean that they do not know the truth. And doesn't mean that they cannot stand for the truth. So education is very important. I come from a country, in a certain, in a part of the country I come from, what happens is that if you have one person travel to the city and that person comes back, what that person does is what every other person does. Because they believe this is the city style, right? So what am I saying here? What I'm trying to say here is that economically, it may be challenged, but doesn't mean that we have to compromise our values. And this is only what education can erode. Until we begin to educate our people, to say the condition we have come to today is as a result of the bad leadership or the bad governance we have. That doesn't mean we have to compromise our values. So that hope, that message of hope, that message of encouragement is what I would say can, is what I can say can help.
Yes, let's take a few calls here. We have like 5 minutes time. Let me see if we can entertain a few calls here, Dr. Kais. All right, hold on the line. Let's see if we can entertain a few calls here before we bring that all-important discussion to a wrap. Let's take this line here. Local line. Caller, yes, good afternoon.
Yeah, man, blessings. Dr. Kaiso, thanks, and I appreciate your precise diagnosis of a global crisis. Some people would think it's just in Nigeria, but in Dominica, we have it as severe on a smaller scale based on the population. But my brother, you talk about something that is very interesting. The way the politicians take the money to empower people who automatically go silent. And Loftus alluded to it. How can you empower a poor people and knowing that they are going to be the resistance, the whistleblower, because from the time independence kicks in, economic and mental and educational and otherwise, then they're going to be a resistance to the corruption. Why would the politicians look to empower them? And what can be done in the outside of that, the outside of this disempowerment? Thanks.
All right. Thank you. Thank you very much. Blessings here. Let me see if we can entertain some more calls here before we ask Mr. Kaiso for his closing comments. Caller, yes, overseas line.
Good afternoon. I just want to ask the doctor a question. Mm-hmm. How does the World Bank, the IMF, and the European Union deal with corrupt leaders? Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you very much for your question here. Thank you very much. Dr. Kai, so you heard the comments and questions?
Yes, I have.
Yes, sure.
Let me know when you want me to...
Yes, you can go right ahead because we have very limited time, 5 minutes left. So I want you to respond to the question and comment and ask you for your closing comments thereafter, knowing fully well that discussion or slash engagement with you will continue.
Sure, absolutely. One of the callers did mention international organizations and agencies.
Yes.
With regards to fighting corruption. Yes, they do have commitments which they have made to help fight corruption. And in fact, they do have publications, not just publications. They do have policies, or they do help this government to make policies. But I know they do have proactive policies in place to help in fighting corruption. And some of this is done at the grassroots, because corruption is not just seen at the governmental level. It's also seen at the level underneath that. It could be in projects which you manage in that country. So I do know that they do have, in some of these institutions, they do have independent sanctions systems, right? And these systems are responsible for things such as investigating allegations of fraud or corruption, especially when it comes to projects that these institutions have funded.
Yes.
So, yes, they do have all of these mechanisms which are there to ensure oversight and to ensure transparency. So, yes, they do have a lot of tools. The first question that came in was a very interesting one to me. And that question was about what could be done to empower people who are at the very, very low state, if I may put it that way.
Yes, and some of these people, the government gives them the money, or, you know, butter their mouths with the money, quote unquote, so that the whistleblowing aspect of the citizenry won't come into full effect. That was the point that the caller was trying to make. How would you empower such people?
You see, a very good point you've made. We did talk about people of which the government of the day actually makes them feeble, right? The government of the day quenches their voice by giving them so much and inundating them with material things. So then, at that point, their voices are lost. What could you do to such people? Unless the society speaks out, unless those people get thrown out of the positions of authority they hold, then there is nothing you can do. Let's say we have a religious leader, and it is on evidence that the religious leader may have accepted funds from one place or another. So long as it's on evidence, and so long as it's made public, that religious leader should be asked to step down, dishonorably. So long as we begin to, so long as we begin to apportion some form of judgment, if I may put it that way, or some form of sanction on them, then they will continue in those places. But what really worries me is about the citizenry. When you are at a level where you do not have much economically, what do you do? Do you follow the order of the day, or do you do otherwise? So that is where I still have to bother on what I talked about when it comes to education. You could be poor, doesn't mean that you don't have a sense of value. You could be poor, but doesn't mean that you accept anything that comes. Because what education gives you hope. Education gives you strength. Education gives you a new person in you, because all you need is an opportunity of which your life will turn around. So I can't talk less when it comes to educating the people so that they will not accept the commonly seen wrong, which seems to be right in our society.
I know.
So what I would want to say as a parting word is two things. The first thing I want to talk about is we should begin as much as we can to embrace collectivism. I have been reading a lot, and when I read a lot, I don't see much when it comes to people saying, make Dominica great again. But when I read, I see people saying, make America great again. So when you look at the American setting, they look at collectivism, what is in there for us. The growth, the strength, the wealth we have is collective, is for us Americans. But when we look at Nigeria, for an example, when we look at Dominica, it's not make Nigeria great, it's not make Dominica great, it's make John Paul great.
Dr. Akai, so we have like 45 more seconds to wrap up with you, sir. I know it's quite riveting a discussion, but we have to wrap up in like 45 minutes time. Your final thought on that, and we got to go.
Sure. So thank you very much for having me. But what I want to leave you with today is that no matter how things may seem in your system that is wrong, doesn't make it right. So we need to decipher between what is right and what is wrong. As much as the wrong is being done, almost at every point in time, doesn't make it right. And let's stick to what's right.
Thank you
very much for having me on the show today.
Mr. Kaiso, final pledge. I would like to ask you, sir, would you mind making that pledge to come back to Q to further that education, sir?
Sorry, I missed.
I was just asking you whether you'd pledge publicly to come back to continue that education sometime into the future.
Absolutely. I'm just a phone call away.
All right. Absolutely. Thank you very much. Thank you, Doc. Thank you.
Thank you very much for having me.
Bye-bye.
All right.